Mandarin. 这里是美国之音的中文广播，现在就开始今天下午六个小时的中文节目。
美国之音以下播报新闻。中共理论刊物《求是》杂志星期六全文刊登了中共总书记习近平2月3日在中央政治局常委会会议研究应对新型冠状病毒肺炎疫情工作时的讲话。美联社说，发表这个讲话的目的显然是要表明中共领导层早就采取了果断的行动，但与此同时也让习近平受到批评，指责他为什么没有更早地提醒公众防护疫情。这次疫情的爆发始于去年12月，湖北武汉是疫情的源头和重灾区。1月23日武汉开始封城，而后又扩大到武汉周边的十几个城市，受影响的人口超过6000万。为了安抚中国民众，尤其是网民的愤怒，中共当局上个星期撤换了湖北省和武汉市的主要领导人。尽管中国当局承诺要对目前的疫情透明，但是公民记者仍然用视频报道挑战当局的官方说法。目前，这些发布武汉疫情第一手资料的公民记者却被失踪，据信他们已经被当局拘留。日本放送协会17日报道，钻石公主号邮轮上大约380名美国公民搭乘政府派出的2架撤侨专机，从东京羽田机场起飞返回美国。目前停靠在横滨港的钻石公主号邮轮至少有355人感染新冠病毒，由于感染人数上有上升趋势，相关各国和地区已经开始展开撤侨程序，包括加拿大、意大利、澳大利亚、台湾及香港都在准备接回旅客。钻石公主号邮轮上有来自多于50个国家及地区大约3700名的乘客及船组人员。继美国撤侨之后，加拿大政府也派出专机接回250名公民，不过只有无症状者才能登机，抵达目的地之后还必须自我隔离14天。除了钻石公主号邮轮上的疫情以外，日本境内多处也传出至少59例的新冠病毒确诊病例，其中一人死亡。日本政府16日首次召开专家防疫会议，承认正式进入扩大感染初期阶段。台湾中央流行疫情指挥中心16日指出，台湾出现首例新冠病毒死亡病例，死者是60多岁的出租车司机，并没有国外旅游史，也不是已知确诊病例的密切接触者。台湾卫福部长陈时中表示，该出租车司机的主要客户是有中港澳旅游背景的乘客，已经就其通联记录、健保就诊资料、监视器录像进行清查，希望能掌握接触史并确认感染源。与死者同住的50多岁弟弟进行裁剪之后确认感染，尽管没有相关症状，已经送进负压隔离病房，至于是谁传染给谁，则还需要进行确认。根据最新统计，台湾目前有20例新冠病毒确诊病例，其中一人死亡，2人出院，其余17例病例情况稳定，目前在医院隔离治疗当中。据路透社报道，马来西亚当局16日表示，来自停靠柬埔寨的邮轮威士特丹号的美国游客经过再一次测试确认受到新冠病毒的感染。马来西亚副总理阿兹沙说，对这名美国游客的再次测试15日晚上进行，结果为阳性，她的丈夫则是阴性。这名83岁的威士特丹号乘客从柬埔寨下船后达到吉隆坡后被检测出感染新冠病毒，他是这艘有1455名乘客和802名工作人员的游轮上唯一发现感染病毒的人。马来西亚当局说，船上的145名乘客到达马来西亚，但只有这对美国夫妇出现了症状。马来西亚副总理阿兹沙说，137名乘客已经离开了吉隆坡。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的商业实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们复习本星期学习的课程，第一课是人物介绍第一部分，介绍主持人 Elizabeth Moore 和语言专家 Gary Angleton。访谈时间，下面就请听 Elizabeth 采访 Gary。Gary 是我们邀请的语言和文化专家，他曾经在加州大学洛杉矶分校主修语言学，后来获得哈佛大学商学院企业管理硕士学位。
Our guest today is Gary Angleton. Gary is the host of Gary's Tips and also of Culture Tips. Gary's Tips and Culture Tips will be regular features on Functioning in Business. Hello, Gary. Welcome to our show.
Hello, Elizabeth. It's great to be here.
On each Functioning in Business program, you'll talk about how to use English in business situations.
That's right. I'll give tips about American culture and about using the English language in business. I'm glad we're able to do this radio show together.
I am too. I'm excited about doing a radio documentary on using English for business.
Me too. I think it will be interesting and useful for our listeners.
Gary, let's tell our listeners a little about your background.
Sure. What do you want to know?
How did you get into the language consulting business?
Well, my training is in linguistics.
Oh, where did you study linguistics?
I studied at UCLA.
That's the University of California at Los Angeles, right?
Right. I got my BA there in 1979. Then I went to Harvard Business School to do an MBA.While I was doing my MBA, I taught business English to foreign students.
That's interesting.
After I got my MBA, I started my own business. I began helping foreign companies do business in the United States. Now I also work with international business people who need help with their English.
We're so happy to have you on our show.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. Gary, it seems that you have a lot of experience in international business.
Yes, I travel abroad a lot, and I'm often on the phone with my overseas clients.
How did you get interested in doing international work?
Well, I grew up in an international family. My father was in the army, and when I was young, we lived in Germany and Thailand. And my mother is Korean. I've spent quite a bit of time in Korea visiting my grandparents and other relatives.
Oh, do you speak Korean?
Yes, I do.
I didn't know that. I've also lived abroad.
Oh, really? Where?
In China. I studied political science at UC Berkeley in the 70s. Then I got a Fulbright scholarship to study in China.
Where in China did you live?
I lived in Shanghai. After I left China, I did a master's in public policy at Georgetown University.
And so, how did you get into radio?
I worked at the local radio station when I was at Georgetown. I discovered I liked asking questions.
You'll get a chance to ask lots of questions on this show.
I sure will. Let's take a break.
Elizabeth 和专家 Gary 进行访谈。
We're back with Gary Angleton, our language and culture expert.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Our listeners have sent in some email questions, Gary. They have some questions about American business culture.
I'll try my best.
Our first question is, do Americans usually use their first name or last name in business?
Well, this is a difficult question. Not everyone feels the same about names.
What do you prefer?
Personally, I always use my first name, but some Americans prefer to use their last names. To be safe, use the name that the other person gives you. I always say, "Please call me Gary."
Our next question is, when speaking with women in business, when should we use Miss, Mrs., or Ms.?
Well, Miss is for single women, Mrs. is for married women. They are older words. Ms. is a newer word. Ms. is easier to use than Mrs. or Miss because you don't have to know whether or not a woman is married. I always use Ms. because with Ms. I usually don't offend people.
What do most American women in business prefer?
I believe that most American women prefer Ms.
Thank you, Gary. Let's take a break. Some people use their first name in business, but others prefer to use their last name. They prefer to use their last name. Most American women prefer to be addressed as Ms. They prefer to be addressed as Ms. In the past, people used to address all married women as Mrs. People used to say Mrs.
Gary 提示，这次要讲向别人提要求的时候，应当使用什么样的语言功能？
Hello again, Gary. Can you tell us more about Gary's tips?
Sure. In Gary's tips, I'll be giving tips about language functions.
What's a language function?
A language function is something that you do with language. An example is a request. You make a request when you ask someone to tell you something or do something for you. For example, in an airport, if you say, "Can you tell me where gate 21 is?" You're requesting directions to gate 21. If you say, "I'd like a glass of water, please," you're requesting a glass of water.
I understand. What are some other language functions?
Oh, there are lots of different language functions, like offering, refusing, confirming, and agreeing. For example, when you say, "Would you like another cup of coffee?" you are making an offer.
I'll look forward to hearing more about language functions in the coming weeks.
Yes, it's going to be fun.
I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. I'll see you again next time.
由节目主持人 Elizabeth 和语言文化专家 Gary 给大家介绍三位工商界人士的情况。
I'm here today with Gary Angleton. Gary is the host of Gary's Tips and also of Culture Tips. Hello, Gary. Nice to see you again.
It's nice to see you again, too.
Gary, let's tell our listeners a little about our show.
Okay. Why don't you start?
All right.As you know, we are following some important business meetings and negotiations. Over the next several weeks, we will be interviewing three business people, Charles Blake, Mike Epstein, and Shirley Graham. Our first guest will be Charles Blake. Mr. Blake lives in Beijing, China. He works for International Robotics, a Chinese company.
What kind of company is it?
International Robotics manufactures industrial robots.
Robots, so it's a high-tech company.
Yes, it is. Then, in another program, we'll interview Mike Epstein. Mr. Epstein lives in Sunnyvale, California, in Silicon Valley. He works for Advanced Technologies, an American company.
That sounds like a high-tech company, too.
Yes, Advanced Technologies makes computer components. The third person we'll interview is Shirley Graham. Ms. Graham is Mr. Epstein's boss. She's a vice president at Advanced Technologies. As you'll see, she and Mr. Epstein don't always agree.
It sounds interesting. When do we start?
In just a moment. Charles Blake will be our first guest. But first, let's take a short break. I'll see you later, Gary.
My pleasure.
Elizabeth 同工商界人士 Charles Blake 进行的访谈。
Welcome back to Functioning in Business. Our guest today is Mr. Charles Blake. Good morning, Mr. Blake. Thank you for coming to our program.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Please tell our listeners a little about yourself and your company.
Well, I work for a Chinese company, International Robotics. Our head office is in Beijing, China.
What does your company manufacture?
We manufacture industrial equipment and robots.
What are the industrial robots used for?
They're used in the manufacturing process, for example, in car manufacturing and in production of computer parts. They make the manufacturing process safer and more efficient. That's because robots don't get tired, sleepy, or hungry.
What are your responsibilities at International Robotics?
My main responsibility is to export the company's industrial robots to North America.
I see. Do you spend most of your time in North America?
Not really. I work at the company's head office in Beijing, but I do spend a lot of time traveling. I usually travel for 6 to 8 weeks a year.
So you live in Beijing?
That's right. My wife is Chinese, and I have one child, a son.
What do you do in your free time?
My free time? Well, I enjoy playing golf and tennis, but unfortunately I don't have as much free time as I would like.
商务对话
Today's business dialogue is about introductions. Imagine you're at an industrial trade show and you hear this conversation.Let's listen.
Hello, welcome to our booth.
Hello, my name is Dennis Chang. I'm the sales manager for Technology Solutions.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Chang.
Oh, please call me Dennis.
Okay, nice to meet you, Dennis. I'm George Smith.
Nice to meet you, George.
I'm the local sales representative for Ace Electronics in Los Angeles. What can I do for you?
My company distributes hardware and software in the eastern United States. Can you give me some information about your products?
Sure. Here are some brochures.
Thanks.
请听下面的自我介绍用语，并且跟着重复。
Hello, my name is Dennis Chang.I'm the sales manager for Technology Solutions. I'm George Smith. I'm the local sales representative for Ace Electronics in Los Angeles.
Gary 提示，今天Gary 要谈在商务交往中用什么样的语言做自我介绍最合适。
Welcome back. You just heard a conversation between two business people meeting at a trade show. Now it's time for Gary's tips. Are you ready, Gary?
Sure thing, Elizabeth.
What's your topic for today?
Today I'll be talking about how to introduce yourself and your company.
That's a really important topic.You should know how to introduce yourself to new clients.
Yes, exactly. So, if you want to introduce yourself to another business person, say hello and then give your name. Hello is better than hi because it is a little more formal. It's best to give your full name, first and last. In today's business dialogue, we heard Dennis Chang introduce himself to George Smith at a trade show.Notice that Mr. Chang gives his full name and then mentions his position and the name of his company. Let's listen again to the business dialogue.
Hello, my name is Dennis Chang. I'm the sales manager for Technology Solutions.
Let's listen to how George Smith introduces himself. Notice that he also gives his full name, his position, and his company.
I'm George Smith. I'm the local sales representative for Ace Electronics in Los Angeles.
If you want to be polite, you should address people by their last name when you first meet them. In the business dialogue, Mr. Smith addresses Mr. Chang by his last name. Let's listen again.
Hello, my name is Dennis Chang. I'm the sales manager for Technology Solutions.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Chang.
It's best to use a person's last name in a business situation until you are very certain that you can be more informal. In the business dialogue, Mr. Chang tells Mr. Smith to call him Dennis. This is a signal to Mr. Smith that Mr. Chang wants to be informal. From that point on, the two businessmen call each other by their first names. Let's listen one more time.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Chang.
Oh, please call me Dennis.
Okay, nice to meet you, Dennis. I'm George Smith.
Nice to meet you, George.
Today we heard some examples of people introducing themselves in a business setting. Remember, when you introduce yourself to say your full name, your position or title, and the company you are with, and if you are unsure about using a person's last name or the first name, use the last name. Well, that's all we have time for today on Gary's Tips. Talk to you again next time.
Thanks very much, Gary.
Our
guest today is Mr. Charles Blake. Good morning, Mr. Blake. Thank you for coming back to our program.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
In our first interview, you said you work for International Robotics.
That's right. We manufacture industrial robots in China.
Let's talk a little about your background. When did you first become interested in international business?
Let's see. I studied international relations in college.
I see. Where did you go to college?
Columbia. I studied at Columbia University.
And when did you graduate?
I graduated in 1986.
What other university courses have helped you as an international businessman?
Well, in addition to international relations, I did study Chinese, but only for 2 semesters.
What did you do when you graduated?
I first went to work for World Products, a small import-export company in New York.
And what did you do there?
I was a salesman. I worked for them for about 5 years.
And what did you do then?
After that, in 1991, I joined International Robotics.
Hello again. We're here with Gary Engleton, our business and language expert. We have an email question for you, Gary. The question is, how do people find jobs in the U.S.?
There are many ways to find jobs in the U.S. One way is through employment advertisements in the newspapers. Newspaper ads are very important in finding a job. There are also employment agencies which help people find jobs. Agencies can be very effective too, but they may charge high fees to help you.
Really?
Yes, but sometimes the company will pay your fee when they hire you. And some agencies will help you write your resume. They can also help you get interviews with important companies. And sometimes the employment agency will help you practice your interviewing skills.
The Internet is also becoming very important in finding jobs. Isn't that right?
That's right. Many companies now use the Internet more than newspapers. But the most important place for jobs is among friends and acquaintances. At business conferences and at parties, people often try to meet someone who can help them find a new job. Meeting and staying in touch with business associates is called networking.
Thanks, Gary. That was very helpful. Let's take a break. Today's business dialogue is about describing your educational background. Let's listen to Mr. Rosenberg as he is being interviewed for a job. The interviewer asks him about his educational background.
Mr. Rosenberg, can you tell me something about your educational background?
Yes, certainly. I did my BS degree at the University of Wisconsin. I majored in computer science. I graduated in 1983.
I see from your resume that you did a master's at MIT.
Yes, I got a master's in electrical engineering and computer science in 1986. My specialization was microprocessor design.
Gary 提示，这次我们请 Gary 来谈怎样介绍你的学历。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's Tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about describing your educational background. Sometimes you will need to describe your educational background. You might be at a party or in a more formal situation, such as a job interview. In today's business dialogue, we heard Mr. Rosenberg at a job interview talking about his educational background. He talked about where he studied, what degrees he received, and when he received them. Let's listen again to part of the interview.
Mr. Rosenberg, can you tell me something about your educational background?
Yes, certainly. I did my BS degree at the University of Wisconsin. I majored in computer science. I graduated in 1983.
Let's listen to some more of the interview. Listen for the information Mr. Rosenberg gives about his master's degree. First, he gives the name of the degree, and then he says what area he specialized in.
I see from your resume that you did a master's at MIT.
Yes, I got a master's in electrical engineering and computer science in 1986. My specialization was microprocessor design.
Usually, we use abbreviations to refer to degrees. When people say they have a BA or a BS, that means they have a bachelor's degree. A BA is a Bachelor of Arts, and a BS is a Bachelor of Science. These are degrees you get after 4 years of study at a college or university. Higher-level degrees are called graduate degrees. An MA is a Master of Arts, for example. An MBA is a Master of Business Administration. Many business executives have an MBA. There are many different ways to say that you have a degree. For example, you can say, I did my BA at Stanford. I got my BA from Stanford. Or, I have a BA from Stanford. Also, when a person says, I went to Stanford, this usually means that the person graduated with a BA. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks, Gary. Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里。谢谢各位收听。我们下次再见。
For further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
美国之音继续播报新闻。中共理论刊物《求是》杂志星期六全文刊登了中共总书记习近平2月3日在中央政治局常委会会议研究应对新冠病毒肺炎疫情工作时的讲话。美联社说，发表这个讲话的目的显然是要表明中共领导层早就采取了果断的行动，但与此同时也让习近平受到批评，指责他为什么没有更早地提醒公众防护疫情。这次疫情的爆发始于去年12月，湖北武汉是疫情的源头和重灾区。1月23日，武汉开始封城，而后又扩大到武汉周边的几十个城市，受到影响的人口超过6000万。为了安抚中国民众，尤其是网民的愤怒，中共当局上个星期撤换了湖北省和武汉市的主要领导人。尽管中国当局承诺要对目前的疫情透明，但公民记者仍然用视频报道挑战当局的官方说法。目前，这些发布武汉疫情第一手资料的公民记者却被失踪，据信他们已经被当局拘留。日本放送协会17日报道，钻石公主号邮轮上大约380名美国公民搭乘政府派出的两架撤侨专机，从东京羽田机场起飞返回美国。目前停靠在横滨港的钻石公主号邮轮至少有355人感染新冠病毒。由于感染人数有上升趋势，相关各国和地区已经展开撤侨程序，包括加拿大、意大利、澳大利亚、台湾及香港都在准备接回旅客。钻石公主号邮轮上有来自于50多个国家以及地区大约3700名的乘客及船组人员。继美国撤侨之后，加拿大也将派出专机接回250名公民，不过只有无症状者才能登机，抵达目的地之后还需要自我隔离14天。除了钻石公主号邮轮上的疫情之外，日本境内多处也传出至少59例新冠病毒确诊病例，其中一人死亡。日本政府16日首次召开专家防疫会议，承认正式进入扩大感染初期阶段。台湾中央流行疫情指挥中心16日指出，台湾出现首例新冠病毒死亡病例，死者是60多岁的出租车司机，并没有国外旅游史，也不是已知确诊病例的密切接触者。台湾卫福部长陈时中表示，该出租车司机的主要客户是有中港澳旅游背景的乘客，已就其通联记录、健保就诊资料、监视器录像进行清查，希望能掌握接触史并确认感染源。与死者同住的50多岁弟弟进行采检之后确诊感染，尽管没有相关症状，已经送进负压隔离病房。至于是谁传染给谁，则还需要进行确认。根据最新统计，台湾目前有20例新冠病毒确诊病例，其中一人死亡，两人出院，其余17例病情稳定，目前在医院隔离治疗当中。据路透社报道，马来西亚有关当局16日表示，来自停靠柬埔寨的邮轮威士特丹号的美国游客经过再一次测试确认受到新冠病毒的感染。马来西亚副总理阿兹沙说，对这名美国游客的再次测试15日晚上进行，结果为阳性，她的丈夫则是阴性。这名83岁的威士特丹号乘客从柬埔寨下船到达吉隆坡后被检测出感染新冠病毒，他是这艘1455名乘客和802名工作人员的邮轮上唯一发现感染病毒的人。马来西亚当局说，船上的145名乘客到达马来西亚，但只有这对美国夫妇出现了症状。马来西亚副总理阿兹沙说，137名游客已经离开了吉隆坡，还有6人在等待航班。他说，鉴于出现这一感染病例，马来西亚不会再让其他来自威士特丹号的乘客进入马来西亚。另外，马来西亚不会允许任何曾经在中国的港口停靠过的邮轮停靠。在下一届美国民主党总统提名竞争中，内华达已经开始提前投票，这是在漫长的州党团会议和党内初选中第3次选出候选人，获胜者有望参加11月的全国大选。以上是新闻播报，感谢收听。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目，因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
观众朋友们好，欢迎收看 VOA 卫视2月5号星期三的时事大家谈，我是许波，我们在美国之音华盛顿演播室为您现场报道。新冠肺炎疫情迅速扩散的紧急关头，中共中央总书记习近平主持召开政治局常委会特别会议，称这次疫情是对中国治理体系和能力的一次大考。这是不到10天之内中共最高层第二次为应对这场危机开会，在过去几十年都实属罕见。疫情来势凶猛，继武汉、湖北沦陷之后，温州、浙江等地也纷纷告急。那么各地政府在应对紧急公共卫生事件中这个出现的混乱令人触目惊心，治理体系和能力的问题暴露无遗。此外，现在的公共舆情与17年 SARS 疫情期间大不相同，越来越多的人拒绝盲从政府的舆论导向，开始理性思考和审视中国模式跟中国梦。那么中共体制能不能通过这次疫情大考？习近平的压力究竟有多大呢？我们今天就邀请专家跟大家一起讨论这些问题。在香港通过视频连线参加我们节目的是香港资深传媒人季硕明。季先生您好。
许波你好，观众大家好。
在维吉尼亚州通过视频连线加入我们访谈的是美国这个华文网刊纵览中国的主编陈奎德。陈博士您好。
你好主播，各位听众好。
我们欢迎两位嘉宾，同时呢我们也欢迎听众观众及网友朋友们通过 VOA 卫视在 YouTube 上的网上直播收看并加入我们的现场讨论。我们的网址是 youtube.com/VOAChina。同时我们也欢迎大家拨打美国之音热线电话来参加我们节目的讨论。习近平主持召开的这次这个中共中央政治局特别会议呢，人们注意到这是过去啊不到10天当中9天大概是中共中央最高权力机构举行的第二次会议。我来请教香港季硕明先生，政治局常委特别会议您觉得它特别在哪里？
这个是相隔1周多啊，再一次为差不多同样的这个会议内容，就是疫情，召开中共常委会议，本身就不在常态，很特别。那么这个呢，说明一个是会议的内容不一般。如果说1周前常委会听取防疫情况的汇报，当时整个基层防疫还处于失序、不透明的状态，那是大年初一嘛，那个开会根本无从下手。现在呢，应该总体情况应该已经清楚了，那就看有什么措施可以遏制病毒，真正的考验开始了。第二个呢，那个疫灾情况是不容乐观。过去中央是维稳体制，讲的都是官话、好话，甚至是屁话，高层听不到实话，也听不得实话。所以讲疫情呢，我们最初听到的都是没有 SARS 那么严重啊，有限度人传人啦，死亡率低等等，尽量粉刷太平的那些话语。但是现况并不是如此，现状是已经突破了那些所谓专家开出的定心丸，所以呢必须要再统一思想，要重新部署，重新制定有效方案。第三个，说明经过1周的抗疫，对这场本不该发生的疫情，中央领导层开始缓过气来，从防疫、治疗、社会舆论控制、全面物资供应以及国际外交等需要统一部署。所以前一次开会重点在湖北和武汉，仅1周时间已经蔓延到全国。所以这一次常委会不仅特别，我觉得而且非常重要。许波，
好的，特别之处很多。那么我们看到央视它近10分钟啊，其实呢大概有13分钟这个没有任何画面的报道呢，就更加增添了这个这次会议的神秘这个色彩，而且呢引起外界的种种 揣测。那么我就请教维吉尼亚州的陈圭德博士。华尔街日报称，不到十天之内召开两次政治局常委会，这在中共这个以往几十年的历史上都是很少见的，您怎么看这个问题？
是，这次会议是比较特殊。我想习近平本身在他上任以后几乎是很少开什么政治局常委会，结果这一次是连续在十天之内连续开了两次常委会。
嗯，
这个说明这个情况是不同寻常，也就是说他感到了这次疫情呢、啊、危及到了他的统治地位，也就是说他们已经得到了国际国内的强烈的反馈，知道包括中国国内，包括中共党内，包括国外的舆论，都对他们处理这次那个疫情，这个武汉疫情的事件有非常多的意见，而且提出了种种的质疑，所以说他们要开这次会。而且这一次大家都看到这个十几分钟没有任何画面的报道，这在过去也是不同寻常的。
嗯，
我想可能有两种解释，我们只能因为他是个黑箱操作，他没有公布画面，我们只能有两种可能的解释。一种可能的解释，我认为是可能是面对这个疫情，包括他们每个人都有各自的恐惧心理和对这个他们现在是不是人都在北京，都在同一个时间能够在那个会场是一个问题。所以说有可能是电话会议或者电视屏幕会，就是说那个屏幕会议，
嗯，
这样召开的一次会议，所以说他没法播出画面。另外还有说的更极端的，有人揣测说这次会议或者是争吵的非常厉害，或者是说已经习近平的权力实际上已经遭受到了某种削弱，但是要顾及他整个的党的利益和面子，所以类似像华国锋后期的这样一个，这让他逐渐淡出权力最高权力这样一个模式。我想这种可能性不能说完全没有，但是我觉得可能性不是很大。
嗯，
我对第一种可能性的揣测比较，我觉得是可能性比较大的，也就是他们没有面对面的在一个同一个桌子上开会，
嗯，
而是开某种视频会议啊诸如此类的。嗯，
好的，那么当然种种揣测呢都有，也都可以理解。为什么？因为央视这种报道本来就不同寻常。
是。
另外啊，像陈博士刚才说的那样，就是也可能呢不在一起开会，因为毕竟有疫情传染的问题。因为李克强总理政治局常委，
你到武汉去过？
对呀，他到武汉去过。好，那么习近平说呢，当前的疫情是对中国治理体系和能力的一次大考。有人说这种说法足见他压力山大。媒体纷纷注意到呢，就在这一次常委会之前，也就是前天以前的一段时间，习近平他罕见的消失在人们视线之内一段时间。请教季先生，当然现在我们看到习近平回来了，会见了柬埔寨这个总理洪森呐、啊、等等。那么请教季先生，您怎么看习近平前一段的隐形以及他面临的压力呢？
前一段隐形呢一定有他的这个原因，就是这个当中这个三号也有传出说这个在武汉有大量的这个神秘车队，对吧？那个有传说是习近平到场，但是三号他恰恰又是在北京主持了常委会。那么就这一个星期大家都在神猜，各种各样的这个说法都有，那包括这次会议刚才那个陈博士也讲了。那但是今天呢，那个习近平是在新闻联播当中是神出现，啊，他主持了中央全面依法治国委员会第三次会议，
嗯，
而且也会见了那个柬埔寨专程赶来的洪森。那先新闻联播有播出，那可能这个猜测也就到此为止了，对吧？那个这一次会议我注意到啊，特别强调了一个对治理体系能力的大考，还特别强调了一个一定要总结经验，吸取教训。就我们看这些年来中国什么时候愿意检讨自己了？即使这场疫灾都很多人出来指责是美国的这个阴谋论， 啊，那个在搞细菌武器，就依照这个习近平不甘认从、不愿低头的心态，要吸取教训，这是近年来罕见的这个放下身段。那么十八大这个执政以来，中国一路都曾经在莺歌燕舞的膨胀之中，到处撒币，四方埋弄，那个包括说厉害了我的国，那个不久前结束的十九届四中全会是总结了中国特色的社会主义治理体系和治理模式，是作为经验之谈，是希望中国可以替代那个西方模式。结果呢，这个一年来啊，遭遇了一连串的不测，你包括非洲猪瘟，让中国的猪肉供应困难。其实这个蒋氏猪瘟，实际上里边也有人祸，是很多农村限制养猪。那贸易战也是从最终的不服，那个最初的不服到最终还是签下协议，经济不断下滑，破七到要破六，那再发生那个香港失信、台湾失控，到武汉的这个肺炎，所以这些年来，除了高调定目标、枯燥喊口号，还没有看到可以落地的这个沉寂的一种实锤。
嗯，
所以自然呢，集权那个唯一一身那个责任，那必然就有一个人来承担。我的结论是什么呢？我就认为一路走来，这个习近平执政最大的特点是要维护共产党的统治，但是接连发生的意外都严重威胁到共产党的执政地位。
嗯，
而且我们看到从上到下都只是往上看，只看上面，只看热闹，甚至还有看笑话的官员也不少，所以呢，习近平压力巨大，相信这个是一个实情。许波，
好的，国际媒体也纷纷注意到呢，说中国国家主席习近平他首次承认应对新冠状病毒肺炎的这个传播管控早期有不足有教训。据日本媒体报道呢，说这是习近平第一次低头承认他亲自领导、亲自部署的工作有误判。我来请教陈博士，有人说呢，说习近平呢低下了他红色贵族高贵的头，这个第一次啊认错。可是我看了一下这个通篇的这个整个这个会议的报道，我没有看出这个问题，不知道陈博士您怎么看这个问题？习近平他有低头认错的这个意思吗？
习近平一直把毛泽东作为他执政统治的样板和导师，一直他就在学毛的那句话，叫做我是不下罪己招的。
嗯，
也就是但是在罪过昭昭然于天下的时候，党内的压力空前大的时候，例如毛泽东在大饥荒之后，62年的7000人大会上，党内的压力极大的时候，他就不得不承认自己的某种责任，同时退居二线，虽然是很言不由衷，就像你看到的具体听到的情景里面很不真诚，很言不由衷，但是他某种意义上也退了一步。但是几个月以后，毛泽东就在八届十中全会上翻案了，教训全党千万不要忘记阶级斗争，然后后来悍然发动文化大革命，又是反攻倒算来清算刘少奇以及党内当年批评他的这些干部了。我想习近平这方面，我想是亦步亦趋的学毛泽东这个手法，他稍稍退一步，这是压力山，因为这是明显的他开始是瞒报，就是把底下的那个报的疫情压住不报的，而且在武汉都封城的时候，还要就在新年团拜会上还要讲那套话，兴国宴舞居然只字不提武汉事件，这个东西当然是现在舆论汹汹，国际国内的舆论包括党内，我想也是有非常多的批评意见了，因此他现在退一个姿态，但是我想他一定是会反攻的，按照他一步一趋的学毛的这样姿态化，因此我们把他这次只是看作一个短暂的让步是可以信的，但是绝对不会真正的让步的。嗯，
面对这次大考呢，有人说习近平内心可谓是五味杂陈，因为这次大考实在太大 考题实在太难了，让我们来一一这个到来分析一下啊。首先我们看应该是疫情严重，我们看到现在继武汉封城之后，湖北全省沦陷，现在温州、杭州啊，今天传出的报道，南京、福州等都实行了不同程度的限制居民出行。有人说呢，这也是封锁，也是封城。浙江全省告急，其他各地也都纷纷告急。我来请教季先生，您如何评估中国境内的现在这个疫情究竟有多严重？
现在几乎啊，我用这个句话啊，就是地方格局，就各个地方自己可以制定一些政策。比如说在高速公路，把不是这个城市的居民，或者说即使是这个城市的居民都拦下来，那在那个高速公路旁边搭很多帐篷，你要在这个里边待14天，你才能离开这个或者上高速公路。就是说各个地方都用这样的一种方式，其实都是变相的在做一个封锁。就一些城市不仅是封城，而且还封了小区，封了村庄，甚至限制在家庭，比如说出门只能派家庭代表去购买那个食物啊等等，这已经有点像进入了一个准紧急状态，就限制人员流动到户，这一点就有点像进入了一个紧急状态。那么也出动了解放军，当然解放军主要还是协助医疗救助。那么不要我们记得就是29号吧，那个习近平就还对军队做过一个指示，那他承认目前疫情防控形势依然严峻复杂，要求全军闻铃而动，勇挑重担，敢打硬仗，积极支援地方疫情防控。就是一般军队出动，军队如果接管，那就是一个戒严紧急状态。现在军队主要还是支持和协助那个地方，那个，所以我觉得它有点类似于那个准紧急状态这样的一个情况。那么更那个迷茫的是什么问题？疫情仍然还没有得到控制，那每天几千个确诊，数千的疑似，那多少死亡还很难有一个这个比较确切的数字。那么继续扩散可能性取决于中国的这个国内的这个防控。那么现在呢，这个的问题是那个从 SARS 到现在17年以来，中国发展的太快，那么社会互动和人员往来这个频密非常难以管控，所以防控不容易。而且呢，还有太多令专家意外的情况，比如说无症状传染。那么今天还有个消息，有一个30天的婴儿受到了这个感染，那么这个都是以前专家所不了解的那个情况，就是说他出生的婴儿可能从母亲这就带出来了。所以虽然经常有好消息，但是什么时候可以控制还很难说。所以我认为呢，就是虽然共产党历来是相信人定胜天，但是至少目前还没有看到曙光。许博，
好的。那么我们看到这场疫情呢，不仅给中国人的生命和健康造成了严重威胁，而且可以说重创中国经济，尤其还影响到这个中国惨淡经营起来的一点软实力。国外现在谈及中国闻风色变，我来请教陈博士，您怎么看这个疫情对中国及其政府的这个影响？
我想这次疫情恐怕对国外的舆论，也包括中国国内的舆论，实际上都比过去更清楚地看到了现在习近平政权他的所谓的管制能力、他的治理水平、治理能力、国家治理能力。他们上一次开会重点的主题就是这个东西是非常的糟糕的。著名的日本的那位思想家和那个政治学家福山，他就谈到他被对过去的结论，他说历史终结嘛，就是自由民主体制获得胜利。后来中国的模式起来以后，他稍微有点纠正，但并没有否定他原来的一些论点，指出中国 这个体系就是说有一点是比较强的，就是说所谓的官僚体系那种执行能力，用中国的话来说是举国体制这样一种能力，是解决一些重大的事件，是尤其是要全党共同来关注的一个事件的时候，比所谓民主国家要来得快，来得有效率等等。当然他说中国像这个政府缺乏合法性的另外两个，一个是法治，一个是所谓的问责，问责实际上也是民主，这两者的缺乏这个我们且不谈。本现在就是到了他的管制能力，就是刚才说的官僚体系这种高效率的管制能力，这次也受到了挑战。也就是说面对突然发生的灾祸，这种体制从来没有好的执政方式，包括中国的三年大饥荒，包括上一次的 SARS， 这一次的那个疫情，还有种种的维稳体制，那是高效率的。但是实际上只要和这个没有关系的，他这套体制是千疮百孔，根本没有执行效率的，就从这个疫情，武汉的疫情看得清清楚楚了。所以说对他们的这个所谓的中国模式，连仅存的这一点所谓的高效率的治理社会的这个能力也给打了否定票。
我们再看看下面各级政府的应变能力啊，体制问题，中国人野蛮落后的饮食风俗引爆疫情在先，中国政府铲上瞒下扩散疫情在后。我这样总结这次疫情的发生和发展，恐怕没有多少人会否认。我来请教季先生，您怎么看中国政府在疫情扩散方面所应该承担的这个责任呢？
其实到目前为止啊，整件事情的来龙去脉的真相仍然不清楚。这或许呢北京很清楚，但他不便说，对吧？这样大面积扩散的疫情直接威胁到数以十万计百万计的百姓生命，而且还向全世界蔓延，在全世界范围扩散，很难说这是因为天灾，是完全人力那个非能力所能控制的。那灾情出现以后，我们看到一而再再而三的拖延，错失了防疫的这个机会，上下对社会的隐瞒是其一。那么其实啊，你就包括武汉那个市长，你不能公开疫情，但是你同样应该可以采取防范措施啊，对不对？你不公开疫情，你却没有做到位，没有采取防范措施。所以他还在粉刷太平，还在歌舞升平，所以这才是导致疫情扩散的真正原因。那这是第二。第三，疫情扩散了，如果能够加大防范力度，及早边控，那包括严格控制出国，可能也没有这么快可以扩散到全球。所以现在其实一场灾难涉及太多的利益，北京仍然怕在社会上国际社会上丢面子，怕丢失眼前的利益。而一场灾难我也觉得多少暴露了这个民族的人性弱点，比如说那个灾情出现了，你规定戴口罩就是有人不愿意，我们看到很多这个视频都是这种情况，那明明从武汉回来偏偏说是菲律宾回来，结果让几千人要隔离。就我认为共产党执政，你讲思想讲核心讲大局都可以，但是在关键时刻这些都没起到作用。就这场灾难就告诉我们，一个民族必须要有符合时代的文化，要讲文明，文化才是一尊，文明才是大局。许波，
好的，我们今天时事大家谈讨论就到这里结束了。时间关系，我们不能一一宣读网友们的所有评论以及回答网友们提出的所有问题。我们感谢陈奎德博士、季硕明先生参加我们的节目。我们时事大家谈是一个自由的论坛，我们的嘉宾、听众、观众发表的都是个人观点，不代表美国之音。明天时事大家谈关注热点话题：学者发怒，公知劝退，疫情肆虐下的民怨能否化解？ 此外也请关注我们的美国观察节目。我是许波，我们下次节目再会。